Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, February 4th, 2015. I'm Lee Robartis. In the news tonight, Washington House Committee holds hearing on oil train safety rules. Washington lawmakers want to end daylight savings time in the Evergreen State. And Idaho Wolf Control Board asks lawmakers for more money. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Washington House Environment Committee is considering rules to increase the safety of crude oil shipments across the state. The oil industry is increasingly relying on rail to transport crude oil from the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota to West Coast terminals and refineries. Railroads shipped 400,000 carloads of Bakken crude nationwide in 2013, up 40-fold since 2008. Many of those loads are traveling through Montana, the Idaho Panhandle along Lake Coeur d'Alene, and through the state of Washington via Spokane. Lawmakers in Olympia are concerned, especially after a runaway train filled with Bakken crude exploded in a Quebec town in 2013, killing 47. House Bill 1449, sponsored by Democratic Representative Jessen Farrell of Seattle, has support from House Democrats, but a similar bill sponsored the first week of the session in the Republican-controlled Senate has not yet received a hearing. Republican State Senator Doug Erickson of Ferndale, the Whatcom County town where the British Petroleum Cherry Point refinery is located, has introduced an oil train safety law that does not include disclosure requirements like House Bill 1449 does. At Tuesday's hearing, House Environment Committee research analyst Jacob Lipson reviewed what House Bill 1449 would do.
So this bill would amend the definition of oil to explicitly include bitumen, synthetic crude, and natural gas well condensate for purposes of the Department of Ecology's oil spill program. It would require railroads and pipelines to provide advance notice to the Department of Ecology before transferring oil between rail, pipelines, and other facilities. It would also require Ecology to aggregate and make public a quarterly summary of oil transportation information and put it online. The bill requires railroads to provide the same type of documentation of the ability to pay for a worst-case oil spill that other facilities are currently required to submit to Ecology. The bill requires railroads to submit contingency plans to Ecology, which are contingency plans are basically oil spill response plans that identify how equipment and personnel are going to be mobilized in the event of a spill. And those oil spill contingency plans must now achieve the same standard of best achievable protection that is required of oil spill prevention plans, which cover how to reduce the risk of a spill happening in the first place. The current oil spill administration tax, which is 4 cents per barrel and goes to pay for many of the Department of Ecology's oil spill program activities, is increased to 10 cents per 42-gallon barrel and is expanded to newly applied oil received by facilities by rail or pipeline in addition to just oil received by facilities from vessels. The new uses of response tax and administration tax revenues on oil and hazardous material safety activities are also authorized. The Pilotage Commission is directed to adopt safety rules for narrow channels of the San Juan Islands by June 2017. Those safety rules can include requirements for tug escorts.
House Environment Committee research analyst Jacob Lipson. Besides focusing on the danger of explosions due to collisions or derailment, the bill also concerns environmental risks. Bill sponsor Representative Jessen Farrell told the committee about a leaky oil train car that lost 1,611 gallons somewhere between Door, North Dakota, and the BP Cherry Point refinery at Ferndale that was not disclosed to state officials for more than a month.
We know that volatile, flammable oil from the Bakken region is coming through our communities, and we know that it's dangerous. There have been accidents across North America, and we want to make sure that our cities and communities are safe. Secondly, we also know that there have been significant changes in how we transport water, oil by water. And we have a great regulatory infrastructure, but things are changing, and we need to make some changes to catch up to how the industry has changed. And finally, of course, well, not quite finally, but we also know that more oil is spilled in the last 40 years than in the last 2 years. And that's just astonishing. So even though we have regulations in place in Washington State, there are some significant gaps. And some of you may have seen an article by McClatchy just recently about a very significant gap. There was a leak of about 1,600 gallons of oil, and it wasn't for a month that key agencies got information about this. So clearly, while Washington State has done some great work over the last 40 years, there are some major gaps, and we need to make sure that our communities, our decision makers, have the information that they need to make good policy decisions, good budget decisions, so that we are avoiding these major accidents that have happened in other places. Again, I recognize this is a very complex bill, and I'm looking forward to continuing the conversation and really getting to a good outcome by the end of the session. Thank you.
Representative Jessen Farrell of Seattle. Farrell said the leak in question was found when the rail car arrived at Ferndale November 5th, but the Washington Department of Ecology, U.S. Coast Guard, and the Whatcom County Unified Emergency Coordination Center were not notified. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad Executive Director for State Government Johan Hellman said his railroad, which ships the most Bakken crude through Washington, opposes the bill before the House.
The bill as it's currently written proposes state regulation of several aspects of railroad operations which are currently addressed by the federal government. These include oil spill contingency planning, geographic response planning, and financial responsibility certifications. In addition to express preemption identified in federal legislation such as the Federal Railroad Safety Act, the federal government has been quite active on railroad safety issues in recent months, including multiple federal executive orders issued by Secretary Fox, which have addressed aspects of contingency planning, additional disclosure of crude transport by rail, train speeds through urban areas, handling practices, and placarding. I would add that legislation very similar to the bill before you passed last year in California and is currently being litigated in that state on the basis of federal preemption. So if there is any question about the purview of the federal government's oversight of railroads, it will likely be addressed through this litigation. In the meantime, there is a serious conversation we can have in this state to advance our mutual interest in improving safety. As many of you have heard me say, safety is the primary mission of our railroad. It's the heart of everything we do. BNSF in the last 3 years has spent more than $15 billion, including hundreds of millions of dollars here in Washington State, to improve our rail network, to enhance safety, to accommodate the full array of commodities we move, and to ensure that we're moving these commodities safely and efficiently for all customers.
That was Johan Hellman of Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway testifying to the Washington House Environment Committee Tuesday. Republican Washington Representative Elizabeth Scott promoted her bill to eliminate daylight savings time in the House State Government Committee Tuesday by saying eliminating the practice of setting clocks ahead 1 hour in the spring and back 1 hour in the fall could reduce vehicle accidents, heart attacks, and work accidents. Scott said, "What I'm suggesting is that we save time by simplifying our lives." A similar bill has not received a hearing in the Washington Senate. Another House bill supported by Republican Representative Joe Schmick of Colfax would ask the federal government for permission to spend the entire year on daylight savings time. Schmick said farmers among his constituents would like an extra hour of daylight in the evening. Under federal law, any state government can repeal daylight savings time, but they need a waiver from the federal government to have daylight savings time year-round. Right now, Arizona and Hawaii do not observe daylight savings time, and five states are considering eliminating it. One of those states is Oregon, which will put a referendum on the November ballot that would eliminate daylight savings time in 2021 or earlier if Washington or California end daylight savings time before then. If Washington were to eliminate daylight savings time, there might be a movement to do the same in northern Idaho to prevent populated areas from being split between time zones half the year, including Lewiston, Clarkston, Pullman, Moscow, and Spokane, Coeur d'Alene. Members of the Idaho Wolf Control Board asked the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee Tuesday for $400,000 to continue their mandate of killing wolves. Governor Butch Otter has also asked the legislature to spend $400,000 on the program. The board spent $140,000 to kill 31 wolves since they started the program July 1st. That's $4,600 per wolf. Board member Carl Ray told the board the money is used for helicopter monitoring, among other things. He said the board is contracted to spend another $235,000 on the program through the end of June. He said the number of wolf attacks on livestock has gone down since 2005. Idaho Fish and Game Assistant Wildlife Bureau Chief Brad Compton said, "All the information we have since we started implementing management, primarily hunting and trapping starting in 2009, is populations are declining slowly. The intent in the future, hopefully, is one of needing less rather than needing more." A 38-year-old Clarkston woman is facing numerous charges stemming from a chase in which she allegedly drove faster than 100 miles per hour in a Soton yesterday. Police say Sarah C. Salem sped past Asotin schools, rammed an Asotin City police car, and headbutted a sheriff's deputy. Asotin City Police Officer Scott Wool reportedly fired two shots at Salim's 2003 Dodge Ram in an effort to stop the vehicle during pursuit near First Street in Asotin. Police said spike strips were also placed at Asotin Creek and Cloverdale Road during the chase. Salim was scheduled to appear for a bond hearing today. Asotin County Sheriff John Hildebrand said the incident began around 10 a.m. yesterday on a back road in Asotin County and ended at the southern part of the city of Asotin at the intersection of First and Wilson Streets. No one was seriously injured. Asotin County Undersheriff Scott Kappas told the Lewiston Tribune the outcome could have been catastrophic. Kappas said the Dodge Ram pickup truck was all over the road and driving in areas frequented by school kids, pedestrians, and other motorists. Police say Salim allegedly headbutted Asotin County Sheriff's Detective Jackie Nichols when the deputy attempted to buckle her into a police car. Asotin County residents will have to wait at least another month before knowing whether or not a controversial gun club will be built in a rural area 8 miles south of Asotin. A standing room only crowd of shooting enthusiasts, landowners, and concerned citizens listened to 90 minutes of passionate testimony from both sides at an Asotin County Planning Commission meeting at the courthouse last night. The commission decided to table its decision, saying the Lewiston Gun Club needs to provide more details on their proposal. The commission also said the application for a conditional use permit in the agricultural zone needs to be resubmitted along with the state's environmental review before a decision on the proposal can be made. Eric Kopsinski, who lives close to the proposed site, said he is worried about the potential destruction of tranquility as well as property values. Kopsinski said, "I live right across the highway. There is no way I can sell my house with a gun club next door. The nuisance and economic impact is huge for me." In July, Washington State University will start construction on a $71 million building called the University Center for North Puget Sound, located near Everett Community College. The WSU Board of Regents approved the building design last week. The 95,000-square-foot center will have classrooms, faculty offices, and services for students working on four-year degrees in science, technology, engineering, and math. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service, 40% chance of rain, mainly after 10 p.m. tonight, cloudy, low 39, 100% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly afternoon, high 47. East winds 10 to 15, gusts up to 20, 80% chance of rain. Thursday, low 43, east winds 15, gusts up to 20, 90% chance of rain on Friday, high near 50, and south winds 15 to 20, with gusts up to 35 miles an hour, 90% chance of rain Friday night, low 43, south winds 15 to 20, gusts up to 40, and 70% chance of rain, mainly before noon on Saturday, otherwise cloudy, high 54, and continued breezy. Currently, we have partly cloudy conditions, 40 degrees at the Pullman Moscow Regional Airport. Thanks for tuning into the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, we have the weekly news magazine, Between the Lines, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, and This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian news magazine at 7:30. At 8 o'clock, World Music with World Waves with Catherine Bonzo, Grateful Dead Through the Decades at 9:30, and at 11, Bob Slacktime Funhouse. You are tuned to KRFP Moscow Pullman Community Radio for the Palouse. I'm Lee Robartis. Joe Campbell assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman, 90.3.